do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
Well, I'd like to welcome everyone back on this Thursday morning. It is April 16th. This is Chris Phelan coming to you from the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Want to thank also the Hunterdon County Office of Economic Development as we continue these special editions here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, our Meet the Expert series, really trying to provide those resources and information to our business community, to our nonprofit community, and hopefully all that do tune in and listen. Want to encourage you as well to visit our website. I've been saying that repeatedly, HunterdonChamber.org. We've got a COVID-19 business resource page that's updated several times a day that is there for anyone to take advantage of, and that's, again, a partnership with the Chamber along with the Office of Economic Development. We've also got a special link on the front page that'll bring you over to past editions over the last couple weeks of our Meet the Expert series, and you can definitely check out some of those programming on our YouTube channel, on our podcast, and or on our Facebook channel. But I want to take this opportunity to welcome John McWeeny, who is the President and CEO of the New Jersey Bankers Association. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you for having me.
No, I really do appreciate you taking time, you know, especially as we still are all responding in the midst of this national and regional and local pandemic. And I'm sure it's been very busy for you and the New Jersey Bankers Association. I mean, one of the things I've shared repeatedly on these shows is we do send our kudos and our sentiments out to all of the frontline responders, all those in the retail field, especially all of our frontline responders in the medical field, our EMTs, our fire departments, our law enforcement. They're doing an incredible job responding along with all those that are still in that service industry. And that includes all of our banking community here in New Jersey, our local banks, our regional and national banks that continue to remain open and, you know, work with our business community as we move forward in these kind of uncharted waters. But, John, could you just give a little background, share with our audience this morning about, you know, yourself and how you came to be part of the New Jersey Bankers Association?
Yeah, sure, Chris. I've been the president and CEO of New Jersey Bankers since 2007, and prior to that, for 28 years, I was a banker myself, spending my entire career with one institution. It started as the Industrial National Bank of Rhode Island and then changed its name to Fleet Financial Group, and then we were merged into Bank of America in 2004. So I was a banker for 28 years, originally from New Jersey, started my banking career up in New England, and worked my way back to New Jersey as the bank I joined just grew and expanded. And I've been leading the Bankers Association since 2007, and it's been a lot of fun.
That's excellent. Maybe also you could share a little bit about the New Jersey Bankers Association. I know you represent quite a few institutions here in New Jersey.
Yeah, the New Jersey Bankers Association is celebrating its 116th year in existence, so we're very proud of that. Today we represent close to 80 banks across the state, a very diverse membership base. We have large members, very familiar household names, as well as many community banks across the state of New Jersey and some regional banks as well. What we do for our members is we provide a variety of services, first and foremost advocacy, so we represent the banking industry in Trenton and also in Washington, D.C. We also do a lot of educational and professional development programs for our members. We have a very full schedule of educational events, which has obviously been impacted by COVID-19. And we have an affiliated company that provides employee benefit services to our members. Essentially, we act as a broker, and we help arrange for health insurance and dental insurance and things of that sort for over 50 community banks here in New Jersey. Those are a few of the things we do, but it's a very active organization.
Well, these are, as I shared just a minute or two ago, and as all we are all going through this, you know, kind of uncharted waters, you know, relative to not only the pandemic, but we are starting to see the severity of the economic impact that this is having currently on so many individuals, on so many businesses, organizations, and the like. Maybe we could just start out just talking a little about some of the services that the banking community is currently providing and has adapted, like all businesses, because I think, you know, you would agree, and you could disagree if you'd like, but this economic recovery period is going to be one that is going to be very long, you know, for our business community, yet that economic recovery is going to be critical, you know, moving forward.
Yeah, sure, Chris. I echo your comments earlier, what admiration and respect we all have for the frontline workers who are dealing directly with the healthcare crisis and putting their own lives on the line. So we have tremendous respect for all the doctors and nurses and supermarket workers, truckers, and the like. From a banking perspective, I feel like our bankers are on the economic front of the battle with COVID-19. They're engaged every day in trying to help their customers, both consumers and businesses and not-for-profits, to try and survive this from an economic perspective. And it's an overwhelming challenge for everybody. And our bankers are working 24/7. You know, there was no Passover or Easter break for many of our bankers. They worked right through the weekend. And I think they're really stepping up and doing a yeoman's job. The first challenge that we faced as an industry was to make sure we just provide basic banking services during the time of the COVID-19 crisis. The governor did deem banking an essential service, so we are, you know, trying our best to stay open and serve our customers. In the early stages, what we saw was a lot of the lobbies of the bank branches were closed down. You can't access those lobbies by appointment. Is there something that you need to do in the lobby? Of course, now anybody who enters a bank, as well as the employees within the bank, you must all comply with the guidelines to wear a mask and gloves and the like. It's interesting that all of a sudden the banking drive-ups became very critical in terms of delivering service to our customers again. You know, for years, some of the drive-up facilities at some of the banks were starting to be closed down because there wasn't a lot of activity. And now it's all of a sudden become a critical delivery source for customers to transact business with the bank in a safe way. And, of course, first and foremost is the safety and well-being of our customers and our employees. The other thing that we've seen is the tremendous investment in technology and innovations that the banking industry has made in recent years in terms of digital banking services has really paid big dividends. There's so many things that customers can do now on their mobile phone or online on their computers and never have to set foot in a bank branch. And in this environment, stay home and be safe. So that was kind of the first phase of this COVID-19 crisis, to make sure that all the branches were accessible, that the online services were running smoothly and customers were aware of what they could do. There was another part of that first phase that I would characterize as a very proactive outreach by banks to their commercial customers, primarily the commercial borrowing customers, because once the crisis started and essentially the economy was shut down, it was apparent that, you know, a lot of banking customers, borrowing customers, are going to be impacted negatively by this. And I think our bankers were very proactive to reach out to their commercial customers. And I don't have any hard statistics to share with you, but I can tell you anecdotally that I believe that probably thousands of loans and probably billions of dollars of loans have been restructured by bankers dealing with their commercial clients, trying to restructure the terms and conditions to give them some breathing room during this crisis.
I guess in terms of that, what would be some advice? I know we've been fielding, I'm sure like many of my colleagues in the chamber world have been fielding and other business organizations, you know, a lot of stress on behalf of folks reaching out and trying to figure things out. And we'll get into some of the specifics maybe on some of the other, you know, programs that have come down since. But what would you give some advice to, you know, those that are in business and trying to work through that, you know, with their lender and, you know, trying to see ways in which that they can now, you know, restructure the debt or figure out other creative solutions to, you know, the lack of income that's happening?
Well, Well, the most important advice I could offer is don't hesitate and be proactive. If you haven't heard from your bank, your lender, reach out to your lender and start a dialogue. It's not in anyone's best interest, if you know you're going to have a challenge making your payments, to just let it linger and not have a conversation with your bankers. They want to work with you. They want to find a solution that will work best for you. You know, a lot of businesses do have trusted advisors they work with, CPAs and the like. We encourage them, obviously, to partner with them. But many small businesses don't have that. There are resources available through these small business development centers across the state and organizations like that. But the most important advice I could offer is reach out to your banker, start a conversation, try and find a way to come up with a solution to get through this.
I think that's sound advice, you know, in terms of having that dialogue and the like. Let's move over a little bit to, you know, the residential borrowers. I mean, so many folks that are impacted now being furloughed or unfortunately laid off. There has been relief within the mortgage industry and the payment protection program. So maybe we could talk a little bit about how that works and what individuals should be doing if they're finding themselves in, again, this type of hardship.
Well, on the residential side, which I kind of characterize as phase two of the economic battle that the bankers have been fighting, once they established the fact that all the services were being provided through the branches and other channels, we turned to residential mortgage borrowers relief. And New Jersey bankers worked with the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance and the governor's office, and literally in a matter of days, we were able to put together a program that provided relief to mortgage borrowers. Essentially, it's a 90-day grace period where mortgage borrowers with participating lenders do not have to make a payment for 90 days. At the end of the 90 days, those payments will either be re-amortized over the life of the loan, or they can be added to the back end of the loan. But it basically gives people 3 months to try and get back on their feet again. You know, none of us know how long this is going to last. A lot of the programs that are being offered now by various government agencies are intended to try and build a bridge between today and that day when the economy opens up again and things start to return to normal. So we were proud of our membership base. So we have close to 70 banks that agreed to participate in the program. And again, this was done in a matter of 3 or 4 days. It was pulled together, and the governor announced it at one of his daily press conferences. The other thing it does is there'll be no negative impact on anybody's credit bureau report for this 90-day grace period. And certain fees like mortgage late fees and fees to withdraw money from a CD, no early penalty fees, the banks agreed to that as well. So hopefully it's helping a good number of New Jersey mortgage borrowers out there to buy some time.
How does it work, John, in terms of those that through their mortgage payments obligate their local property taxes in terms of payments?
Well,
or is that on a case-by-case basis?
A lot of the mortgages obviously escrow for mortgage payments. If the monies are in the account, in the escrow account, when the mortgage payment comes due, the bank will make the payment. If the customer cannot put enough money into the escrow account during this time period to pay the taxes, the bank will pay the taxes as well. So I guess it's going to be handled on a case-by-case basis, depending on how much money they have in their escrow account or not. But at the end of the day, if a mortgage payment comes due and the bank has a mortgage on that property, they'll pay the taxes, and the customer will have to be responsible for making that up after the fact.
Sure. Let's move back over on the commercial side, talk a little bit about the SBA Economic Injury Disaster Loan. I know the federal government, the president, Congress has put together, you know, quite a bit of relief in this package, and you know, businesses are obviously looking for, you know, help and assistance, and this may be, you know, something to take a look at, you know, as well for organizations that may qualify.
Yeah, it's a huge undertaking, and after we talk about the PPP program, there's some other things we could discuss as well that might be of interest to businesses. But the Payment Protection Program was the major initiative initially that came out of the CARES Act targeted towards small businesses, and it's an effort to try and help small businesses keep people on the payroll for the next 8 weeks or so. Again, kind of bridge them for the next couple of months. It's a program whereby if 75% or more of the proceeds are used to support payroll, then the loan will actually be forgiven. You can use the loan balance, the loan proceeds for interest on a mortgage payment or a rent payment. You could also use it towards utility bills. But as long as 75% of the amount borrowed is used towards payroll costs, the loan amount will be forgiven in its entirety. So obviously it's an attractive deal for customers. The interest rate on the loans is only 1%. The term of the loan is 2 years. So if it wasn't forgiven, if you used the proceeds for something other than payroll and the loan was not forgiven, it would be a 2-year loan at a 1% interest rate. It's unsecured. There's no personal guarantee involved. And the maximum amount of the loan is either the lesser of $10 million or there's a formula that calculates what your payroll expenses are. Roughly, take the last 12 months average payroll, multiply it times 2 and add 25% to it, and that will determine how much you can borrow. Now, here's the thing with the PPP program. It was launched on Friday, April 3rd, and here we are on Thursday, April 16th. It was $349 billion made available, and we expect it to be fully subscribed sometime today.
Wow.
In a normal business year, maybe a good business year, the SBA might do $25 to $30 billion a year in their 7A loan program. This program is $349 billion, and in less than just a few weeks' time, the money is going to run out. And that's a good news, bad news story. The good news is, a lot of businesses have applied and been approved for loans. The bad news is that there may still be some businesses who haven't applied yet, or they have applied and they haven't been approved for their loan yet. Our understanding is that if an authorization and approval has been issued by the SBA, that the customers, the borrowers will get their money. I don't want people to panic. If they've been approved for their PPP loan by their bank and they haven't closed it or funded it yet, there's no need to panic. If you've got an authorization, the bank will fund the loan over the next number of business days. It's designed to fund them within 10 business days of the approval. But if someone has applied and they have not gotten an approval yet, unfortunately, they're kind of left, waiting to see what happens next. And what we hope and believe will happen, and the banking industry, along with a lot of others, have been lobbying hard to happen, is that Congress appropriates additional funds for PPP. Hopefully something in the neighborhood of $200 to $250 billion more, so that all of those businesses that have not applied yet or been approved yet will also have a chance to access these monies. Because it's a critical lifeline to small businesses to get them to keep people on the payroll for the next 8 weeks, and then hopefully within that time frame we're starting to see the economy open up again. So I kind of went on there for a few minutes. I'll stop and see if you have any questions.
So the PPE loan is one that the individual applicant, the business, works directly with a bank as opposed to going to the SBA. What happens to those that did not receive the funding and things have timed out? If there is another round of funding, will they have to go back to that bank and reapply?
Well, if they've applied and their loan was approved and an SBA authorization was issued and they haven't received their money yet, they will get their money.
Right.
The SBA has been keeping track of the amount approved, That's why once they hit the $349 billion, that will stop and there will be no further approvals until more money is funded, appropriated by Congress. So those people will get their money, and most likely their monies will be available within the next 5 to 10 business days. They shouldn't panic or be concerned. You know, they can have a dialogue with their bank. If they've applied for the loan and it was not approved yet and did not get authorized by the SBA, they should contact their bank. And I think we're all just kind of sitting tight for hopefully no less than 24 hours here, where we get further direction that Congress is approving more monies and then the SBA will provide direction. I would think that with a completed application and everything ready to go, once they get the green light from Washington, and hopefully they will, then they could go ahead and submit that application.
So that is going to be a kind of a wait and see. And, you know, we hosted last week along with the Office of Economic Development here in Hunterdon County and the Somerset County Business Partnership a kind of town hall webinar with Congressman Mulinowski. So I would encourage, you know, folks to continue to reach out to the congressman to encourage, you know, Congress and the President and the Senate taking action on that, you know, if this appropriation, which seems, you know, as you said, is going to run out, you know, today or tomorrow.
Yeah, we would encourage folks to contact their congressional representatives as well. We've had some dialogue with a few members of the New Jersey delegation. I participate in daily conference calls with my peers at the other state bankers associations around the country, and there doesn't seem to be disagreement that the monies are needed and they're needed now. You know, there's some, I guess there's some debate over how some of the dollars should be allocated, but hopefully our representatives in Congress will work that out very quickly because the need is incredibly great. Honestly, if there's another $250 billion, I wouldn't be surprised if that runs out too down the road because the need is just that great.
Yes, we've been talking. This is definitely going to be a long recovery period, and all of this is that bridge to keep our economy going here. Let's segue over to the other, you know, programs offered by the SBA. I know there's the folks are referring to the EIDL, E-I-D-L, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, and maybe we could talk a little bit about that program for businesses.
Yeah, sure. And before I mention that, let me just mention one other thing, Chris. For anybody who has an existing SBA loan, either a 7A loan, a micro loan, or a 504 loan, those are all different SBA loan products, the SBA is going to make those loan payments for those borrowers for the next 6 months, principal and interest payments, which is going to provide tremendous source of relief to those borrowers. We've been waiting for further guidance on when that will actually take effect. We were of the understanding that it would start in April, but we're, you know, here we are on April 16th, and it hasn't started yet. And this is a program that borrowers need to contact the SBA directly on. But we do expect that this will be launched very quickly. And, again, it's a significant benefit to existing borrowers. The SBA, for the next 6 months, will essentially make the payments on those loans to the banks that hold them. So that's something for small business borrowers to be aware of and certainly to take advantage of.
No, thank you for sharing that. And if folks are just joining us, I'll just jump in for a minute here. This is Chris Phelan again with a special edition here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in partnership with the Hunterdon County Office of Economic Development. We've got John McWeeny on, who is the president and CEO of the New Jersey Bankers Association. So we're broadcasting concurrently on our Facebook stream. So if anybody does have questions, feel free to shoot those over to me in the comments, and I'll bring that up. And maybe we'll segue, John, back over to, you know, some of the additional programs that the SBA is offering under this disaster loan program.
Yeah, the other product or program that the SBA has out there, and this actually started before PPP, is the SBA Economic Injury Disaster Loan, EIDL. Sorry for all the acronyms, but that's what we do.
Sure.
And the economic injury disaster loans, you apply directly to the SBA, not to the bank. The PPP, you apply to a bank. This program, you apply directly to the SBA. The maximum loan amount is up to $2 million. This is a fixed interest rate of 3.75%, and it's a 30-year term. So it's a longer-term solution, obviously, than PPP. It's a 30-year term, but for the first 12 months, there's a payment deferral. So you won't have to make a payment during the first year. This program does require collateral. It does require a personal guarantee. As a part of the program, you can receive a $10,000 forgivable grant within 3 business days of when you're approved. So it gives you some quick cash right out of the gate. And you can have an economic injury disaster loan and a PPP loan, but the loan proceeds cannot be used for the same purposes. So, again, it's another program that's out there. It's more of a longer-term type of credit facility. This could be used for things perhaps other than payroll needs, which the PPP program will address. But it is another option. It's handled directly by the SBA, and you contact them for application.
And John, do they? I know we have that up on our website. Again, we've got a resource page. Will they be working with the SBA, the New Jersey office, or will they be working with someone out of another office, out of state?
I would contact the New Jersey district office.
Okay.
For these EIDL loans.
Well, again, we've got a great resource page for those listening here with us this morning, and that's right up on the front page of the Chamber site. And each one of these programs, along with some of the other seminars and webinars that have been recorded, are up there as well. Let's move over a little bit. This is, I keep using that term, that cliche, this is really unprecedented and unchartered. And no doubt the Federal Reserve has taken some unprecedented steps as well. So maybe we could talk a little about their role, a little background on that maybe for, our economy. And they've also put together a Main Street lending program as well.
Sure. The Fed has really reacted very quickly and very aggressively to this crisis. And, again, their actions are unprecedented as well. I may be a little off, but I believe the amount of liquidity that they're putting into the system is somewhere in the neighborhood of $7 trillion, which is an incredibly large sum. They came out the week before last with a couple of programs that will assist in this time of crisis. One thing that they did is they approved a credit facility or credit borrowings whereby banks that are lending in the PPP program can take the loans that they make, pledge them as collateral to the Federal Reserve, and the Fed will lend 100% against those loans, effectively putting more liquidity back into the banks, just giving their balance sheets more liquidity because, the banks don't have an unended source of capital and liquidity to make loans. So for many of our banks, the activity has been very significant, and it's created some concerns about their liquidity. So this would allow them to borrow from the Fed dollar for dollar using their PPP loans as collateral and essentially putting all that liquidity back on the balance sheet of the banks, which allows them to do more lending, whether it be through PPP or whatever other program that they're going to use those monies for. So that's a significant development. The other thing that the Fed did is they created two loan programs. They're very similar. One's called the Main Street Loan Facility, and the other one is called the Main Street Expanded Loan Facility. And we're still waiting to get some more details on this. We've seen a term sheet. Spoke to one of my bankers yesterday, and they don't have all the specifics and details yet. They haven't started taking applications yet, but this program deals with larger dollars and larger companies, if you will. So whereas the PPP program, you're eligible if you have less than 500 employees, or you can be eligible if you have over 500 employees if you're in certain industry segments that the SBA has identified. The Main Street loan facilities, you can have up to 10,000 employees. And the loan amounts are quite large. For the Main Street loan facility, you could borrow up to $25 million, and it's over a four-year term. For the Main Street extended or standard loan facility, you could borrow up to $150 million, and it's a four-year term. The rates on the Main Street loan facilities are not fixed. They're adjustable rates. They're floating rates, and they use SOFR, which is the Secured Overnight Financing Rate, as the basis off to which the rate interest rate is based. So it's SOFR plus somewhere in the range of 250 to 400 basis points is what the interest rate would be on a floating basis. There is a 1% fee that the borrower has to pay. The way it'll work is the loan itself, a bank will hold 5% of the loan on its balance sheet, and the Federal Reserve is creating a special entity that will hold the other 95% of a loan. So it's participated out between a bank and the Fed, with the Fed holding 95% of it and a bank holding 5% of it. This program, you do apply to a bank directly, and the bank will handle the processing of the application and the loan approval and the like. This program, as we understand it, is going to be available through September. I think it's going to be available for the next 3 or 4 months or so. And I guess depending on the demand, we'll see how long it's out there. So it seems to me this is a more of a longer-term borrowing need. It's a program that is for larger companies, but that's another important part of our, economy. That's an important segment of the economy, and this is a program designed to try and help those companies.
Maybe, John, too, you could just shed a little light on, the action by the Federal Reserve in regards to the interest rates and what the banking community is kind of thinking on that short-term or even long-term.
What the Fed's going to do with interest rates?
Well, I guess what they've done already and how that is going to, continue to, I think, be positive, but is this a short-term to long-term opportunity in terms of the adjustments of the interest rates?
Well, rates, as you know, have been historically low now for some time, and they're getting lower, of course, in this environment. That presents some challenges for banks, in that most of our bank members, we have a variety of members of different sizes and business models. Some are larger institutions, and they generate revenue from a lot of different sources. Loan income is one of them, that interest income. But they might have income for cash management services or insurance services or wealth management services and the like. A lot of our New Jersey community banks are pretty traditional in the sense that the largest part of their revenue is generated by net interest income. So it's the difference between what they earn on the loans that they lend out and what they pay depositors for borrowing that money. So the spread has gotten quite thin recently. And I think this environment will probably lead to that net interest margin being constrained for the near future anyway, which obviously will have an impact on bank earnings. So the larger the net interest margin, the more money that they make. So in this environment, that'll be a challenge. It has been somewhat for the past year or so. I think, a bigger concern for banks in this environment is just asset quality, how the loan portfolios they have perform. Obviously, a lot of borrowers are under distress, and banks are preparing for the challenges of what that'll bring in terms of ultimately whether they're able to collect on the loans or not. And that's why I mentioned earlier our banks have been proactive to try and work with their borrowers to do everything they can to help their borrowers through these challenging times so that when we get through it, you still have a business that's in business and they're able to employ people, contribute to the economy, and pay back their loans. So it's going to be an interesting environment, and I think it's, you know, everybody's unsure how long this will last for. Is it going to be a few months? We're going to start to see the economy slowly, gradually reopen in May and June, or is it going to be prolonged? And it may differ depending on what part of the country you're in or what industry you're in. So it's uncharted waters.
Yeah, definitely. I guess there's a question on the Jersey side. I know some of our micro lenders, like the UCEDC, were offering initially some funding opportunities, especially for those very small or at-risk commercial clients. And I know the NJEDA is looking at, hopefully getting money to put back into their coffers as well so that they can continue to do some lending. I didn't know if you had any insight, you know, relative to that organization and or, you know, RBAC here in Jersey as well.
Yeah, I think they're doing great work.
Right.
And I think the challenge is going to be the amount of funding they have available either has or will dry up fairly quickly. The EDA launched a series of programs, and my understanding is that they're subscribed, either they're fully subscribed or they will be very shortly. And that's great that the money's getting out to those in need. And then the challenge we have, either from a government perspective or from the private perspective, is how do we get more dollars out there to help these entities do the work they're doing. I think, you know, our banks have been supportive of a lot of these organizations over the years, either by trying to help provide some funding or by participating in their programs, making loans with guarantees of that sort. So I expect that to continue. But it's going to be a continued collaboration between the private sector and the public sector to try and hold this economy up for the next few months until we get to the other end.
Well, folks are just joining us. This, again, is Chris Phelan coming to you live from Hunterdon Chamber Radio Studios here at the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. We're continuing our Meet the Experts series here, and this is sponsored not only by the Chamber but by the County Office of Economic Development here in Hunterdon. We have John McWeeny on the line, who is the President and CEO of the New Jersey Bankers Association. And I do want to be cognitive of time and kind of segue, John, in these last few minutes over to, you know, some of the philanthropic efforts that even in the midst of these challenging times the banking industry is doing. I got to give kudos to our local home-based institution, Unity Bank. They stepped up and announced right at the outset of COVID-19 a $100,000 pledge to Hunterdon Medical Center and to help them with the COVID response. So I know this is happening throughout the state and throughout the country, but maybe you could share, you know, here in Jersey, some of those great efforts that are helping to support charities and nonprofits and individuals.
Yeah, you know, we take a lot of pride in the banking industry that our banks are really good corporate citizens, and in good times and maybe especially in bad times, they really step up and they try and support the communities where their customers and employees, you know, live and work. We have a long history and tradition of doing that, both in terms of philanthropic contributions as well as community service and the like. So you mentioned Unity Bank. That's terrific what they're doing. We're hearing and seeing press releases from a number of our member banks that are doing things. I'll mention a few names, but I hope that I don't offend any of my members if I haven't seen their announcements or if I forget them, because so many of them are doing things. But I know that I saw recently Kearny Bank is donating $200,000 from their charitable foundation to support a number of different community organizations in the markets where they are. Provident Bank has a charitable foundation. They announced $100,000 they were making available. Down the shore here in Monmouth County, Manasquan Bank also announced $100,000 being made from their foundation to support a variety of local not-for-profits and organizations. It's not a charitable contribution per se, but in the news the other day, Columbia Bank was noted because they provided, I think, $1.5 million or so in financing to help set up a field hospital in Edison, and that was done in a matter of days with their support. So there's a lot of those examples out there. I read in the news this morning, PNC Bank announced a $250,000 contribution to the New Jersey Pandemic Relief Fund, obviously a larger organization. So I think you'll see a lot of larger banks as well as community banks, and I'm sure there's some that have been announced, and I didn't capture them all. What New Jersey Bank is doing is we have a charitable foundation ourselves. It's just smaller in size compared to some of the banks. But we announced to our members that we would match up to $50,000 in donations to the New Jersey Pandemic Relief Fund. That's the fund that was established by Governor Murphy's wife, and they're trying to target the resources to needed organizations throughout the state, whether it be healthcare or food banks or whatever. So we put that challenge out to our members on Monday of this week. And by last night, we were almost at the $50,000 match, and that was from probably about 7 or 8 banks. So we're quite confident that we'll be making a $100,000 donation to the Pandemic Relief Fund, and I suspect that the dollars will go higher than that. So just a little bit of a sampling of what the banks are doing, and I'm sure I'm understating it because I know there's things that are going on that we may not have captured yet.
No, it is. It's going to be, as you said, all of us coming together and supporting our local communities, our county, our region to, continue to push forward. Like to, give you at least a little wrap-up there. If there's anything else, John, you would like to share. And also I'd like to have you maybe share how folks can, visit the website of the New Jersey Bankers Association and or, get in touch with your organization.
Well, that's easy. Our website is njbankers.com, and you can go to our website. I heard you mention that you had a coronavirus page on your website. We do as well. On that page of our website, we actually have listed the various announcements, press releases that our member banks have issued over the past 2 to 3 weeks. Capture some of the philanthropic things that they're doing, but also just things that they've been doing to try and, help their existing customers, whether they be residential or commercial customers. And there's other information available about the association. I would say just in wrapping up, my advice to anyone who's an existing borrower, if you're feeling distressed, whether you're a consumer or a business, contact your lender, whether it's a bank or a credit union or whoever. I think everybody in this environment is really trying hard to work with their customers to provide support and relief. It's in everybody's interest, best interest to work together. I'll just, again, on behalf of the Bankers Association, express our gratitude and support and admiration for all the frontline workers, the doctors, the nurses, the delivery truck drivers, the supermarket employees, the policemen, the firemen, for all the great work they're doing on the front line and really putting their lives on the line. And just let your listeners know that from the economic battlefront, the banking industry is working hard to try and do our part, and our bankers are working 24/7, through holiday weekends to try and do everything they can to help everybody through this crisis.
I really want to thank you, John, for spending some time with us this morning. This is going to be available by tomorrow morning up on our website. So we'll continue to promote this great information. Also want to thank you for your leadership and service to the New Jersey State Chamber of Commerce. I know you serve on that board of directors. I got to say kudos to Tom Bracken, the president of the State Chamber, Michael Engenton, his senior VP. The work that the State Chamber is doing, in addition to so many other state organizations, is really making a difference. And the information they're bringing back to us, as you just have locally here, is something that I know our business community here in Hunterdon County is very appreciative of.
Yeah, it really is quite gratifying to in this time of crisis, while there's so much to be concerned about and some of the stories are just so tragic, there's also things that you see out there that are really inspiring, and it's gratifying to see how everybody from the business community and government and healthcare community, everybody's trying to band together and work together to get through this. New Jersey's a tough state, and New Jerseyans are tough people, and I have no doubt that we'll get through this.
Well, I thank you very much, and thank you and your organization and your entire team there, and again, the entire banking community for all that you're doing to help our businesses and individuals, our residents, you know, go through this and recover. Be well and be safe, John.
Thank you, Chris, and the same to you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Well, that was John McWeeny, who is the president of the New Jersey Bankers Association, joining us for another edition here this morning on Meet the Experts. This program has been brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce and the Hunterdon County Office of Economic Development. We will be having additional series as we move forward. Really want to encourage you to visit our website, hunterdonchamber.org. Visit our COVID-19 page. We have information that is being culled and updated on a federal, state, and local level for anyone to take use of. And those resources are really literally updated several times a day. So please check out that page. You could check out our COVID-19 special chamber series, our web series here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio for the podcasts and the YouTube channel and the Facebook channel. You can go visit and see some of those back series right as well on the front page of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Want to mention a few other things that are out there. Please visit our events calendar. We continue to put out webinars and information and seminars for the business community, many of which are being sponsored by other organizations as well. So we're just trying to, you know, make sure that everybody's aware of it. We've also got other programming available, not only to our members, but the entire business community. So we've done some things like launch a series of different Facebook pages. So you can check out those links on our Facebook page. But we've got one for restaurants. We've got one for nonprofits. We've got a Facebook group up there for health and wellness. So, again, a lot of different resources that we're trying to provide. We've also opened up our job bank. And the job bank is both for folks that are employers and those that are seeking work. So you can post your resume or you can post, you know, a hiring opportunity that you might have. And, again, visit our website. Just look for the job board. And, again, any business can take advantage of that. And please know that if there's anything that we can do here at the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, reach out to us. We'll be happy to help and assist. You can, again, visit our website, hunterdonchamber.org. You can email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. And again, stay tuned for another edition of the Meet the Experts series brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce and the Hunterdon County Office of Economic Development. We'll have a few more scheduled for next week. Check out our past copies. And again, I want to send my best and sincere thanks to all of those that are out there in the service industry, all the essential services that are open, all of the workers that are putting themselves at risk and continue to serve us. That includes our private sector from, you know, the grocery stores to our public sector to, you know, the folks that are working in our municipalities and the county, especially all those out in the healthcare field. Kudos to Hunterdon Healthcare System, all the doctors, the nurses, the technicians, the staff. You know, everybody is doing so much. All of our first responders, want to thank the Hunterdon County Office of Economic Development. Want to thank the Hunterdon County Office of Emergency Management, the Hunterdon County Health Department. You know, all of these entities are moving forward, you know, with so much information, law enforcement, everybody's coming together. So, again, we want you to be well, be safe, and thank you for joining us on this special edition of Meet the Experts here on HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
You're listening to HunterdonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
An awaited report has come out, and when it comes to the nation's unemployment situation, things are a little bit better this week, but still far from normal. As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to sweep across the nation, the number of Americans filing for jobless benefits is down a bit, yet still staggeringly high. The Labor Department reporting that 5.24 million people submitted first-time requests for jobless benefits last week. Most economists had been expecting the number today to be somewhere in that neighborhood. While it is down from a record 6.6 million a week prior, it still means an estimated 22 million people have now sought jobless benefits since the nation started shutting things down in March amid the spread of the virus. President Trump is expected to unveil his plan today for restarting the U.S. economy, and you are listening to USA Radio News.
This report is brought to you by the College Board. The unprecedented spread of the coronavirus has closed schools across the country, some for the rest of the year. So what about the millions of high school students who have been working hard to earn college credits by taking advanced placement classes? The College Board has unveiled virtual supports for students, including free, live, and on-demand AP review lessons on YouTube, and the first-ever online AP exams. Students can take the AP exam at home on a device place of their choice in a safe, comfortable environment. Trevor Packer is the Senior Vice President for Advanced Placement and Instruction at the College Board.
We've surveyed AP students nationwide, and the vast majority want to take the exam. That's why we've set up a process that's simple, secure, and accessible. We want to make sure that every student has the chance to earn the college credit they've been working so hard for.
The 45-minute online exams will be given from May 11th through May 22nd. Makeup test dates will also be available. To learn more, visit cb.org.
The president's talking about reopening the economy and getting back to normal, but more and more governors are ordering that face masks be worn just to do simple business, as we hear from Marianne Perry.
As the COVID-19 crisis continues, Governor Larry Hogan has issued an executive order requiring everyone in the state of Maryland to wear a face mask or face covering whenever they are inside a retail establishment or using public transportation. The order also applies to staff members of those businesses. The executive order goes into effect 7 o'clock Saturday morning.
A federal CDC response team is to tour the Smithfield Foods plant in Sioux Falls, South Dakota today. The processing facility, which accounts for 5% of all U.S. pork production, is now closed after more than 500 of its employees tested positive for COVID-19. JCPenney is considering filing for bankruptcy protection because of the economic downturn, and this is USA Radio News.
At the American Veterinary Medical Association annual convention in Washington, D.C., I spoke with Dr. John Howe, AVMA president, about One Health.
One Health is really a collaboration between physicians and veterinarians or public health officials. For example, in Minnesota, our state public health veterinarian deals with zoonotic diseases, rabies, for example. Animals are sentinels for humans, and humans are sentinels for some infections in animals.
There's more valuable information at avma.org.
A state hard hit by coronavirus is trying to help its working residents, as we hear from USA Radio's Wendy King.
California is making plans to reopen businesses to help ease the unemployment crisis that they have there due to the coronavirus pandemic. California was once a state with record low unemployment, but now that's reversed.
Just like that, now 2.7 million people claiming now the need for unemployment insurance in just over 1 month.
California Governor Gavin Newsom signed an executive order to expand state unemployment office hours. He also created a fund to help illegal immigrants.
We feel a deep sense of gratitude for people that are in fear of deportation, but are still addressing the essential need.